Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome once again to another sparkling edition of Plank of the Week. There's been plenty of planks this week, but as ever, it's going to be very, very difficult to make sure that we can name only 10. We've got 9, of course, to get new nominations, and we bring one across from last week. I'm joined today, I'm delighted to say, in the company of the world-famous Carol Decker and Television's very own Kevin O'Sullivan. Kevin, a very good...
Hello,
guys. How are you both?
Hello, Mike.
Very well, dialing in from Oxfordshire.
Very nice, very nice. Let us know if you see any of the Cameron family driving by with their police escorts, would you?
No, but Mrs. May's just up the road.
Oh, very nice, okay.
Yeah, so,
well, listen.
And George Clooney, very good friend of mine, he's just up the road.
Oh, very nice. Well, you might get Harry and Meghan, of course, who make this plank list so often that I sometimes have to consciously not put them in, because they've actually made quite a few plankish statements this week, including that they're finding it very challenging living abroad in Malibu, which, of course, as we all would, you know, and also apparently that they've refused anybody in I think it was some organisation in Australia who wanted to use their son Archie's name to put onto a new fireplane, you know, an anti-fireplane.
That's so ungracious.
And they said no. On the grounds that Archie had not yet entered public life. I mean, do me a favour.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, we've given him an honourable mention, but Carol, why don't I come to you for your first nomination, please?
OK, well, my first nomination, I'm going to go for Jamie Oliver, who seems to come out with a cooking programme relevant to any circumstance within the blink of an eye. He's always ready to pounce. And this time he's got a show called... Keep Cooking and Carry On, and he is showing us what to cook with what you've got in your larder or your fridge.
Right.
But normally he's in a nice, big, spacious kitchen, a bit like James Martin, you know, regular cookery program. But this time, because clearly he's thought, well, there's a lot of people out there who just, they don't live like I do, and they've got smaller kitchens. They might be in a council flat, you know, so we better show some empathy.
So yes.
He appears to be cooking in his outside toilet. So it's a really tiny little room, and he's got two, I can't remember if they're gas, they're probably electric, like those little plug-in camping things you can buy to cook on. I've got some. And a very small knife and a chopping board and one pan. So it looks like he's camping, because he's trying to show you, you know, even if you don't have much money and you're in a tiny little kitchen, you can still cook something, you can keep cooking and carry on. And he was recommending, you know, use some prawns, he had some really nice herbs, and then he was going, and a great thing for the kids is pasta. Well, of course, Gogglebox went to town on him going, there isn't any pasta.
It's right, actually. So, funnily enough, I spoke...
I know Jamie Oliver is he's moved into national treasure status. I appreciate that. And I'll probably get loads of hate Twitter mail, but I'm going for Jamie. I just think it's beyond patronising. I really do.
I don't think he's national treasure status with all the employees of his restaurant chain that went bust, who are now unemployed. I bet they're
loving
his show.
Well, if he'd waited a while, he could have blamed that on Corona as opposed to Brexit, which he blamed
as opposed to him not being very good at running restaurants, because those Jamie's kitchens were terrible, terrible restaurants.
Food was shocking.
Jamie
we had
Italian.
One at Reading, and the food was absolutely shocking. I was very disappointed anyway, because living out in the sticks now, I get really excited when a new restaurant opens in Reading. And, it was very disappointing. Anyway.
Well, presumably
that
now...
program, though, his cooking show, on Channel 4 feeds into Channel 4's apparent policy when it comes to lockdown television. They've gone gangbusters on all these shows that are made by celebrities with their wife pointing the camera, deliberately looking amateurish and knocked together in these difficult times. But yeah. What it actually does, there's another show called The Steph Show, which is this sort of northern woman who...
I hate her.
I don't know her, but she gets my nerves.
Yeah, but she was going to do it in the studio. It's the big launch of her show. Instead, because of the lockdown, they're doing it at her house. And it is a textbook lesson in technical hitch disaster. It is a catastrophe. And so Channel 4, as always, getting it wrong. Let's do television like this. Let's do it home video style. No, it's rubbish.
But at least I think if
anybody can stay in their professional environment, they should, because it looks better.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I'm doing. I mean, Kevin, you were in the studio, I think, on Saturday for your excellent first show at Talk Radio on Saturday.
Sure I was, yeah.
When you had all these great guests. You're not going to be able to do that every week, though, are you? So you're going to have a challenge next week to do as well. But it was brilliant, I have to say. And talking about getting excited when restaurants open, Carol, presumably when anything opens, if the fish and chip van came past, you'd be pretty excited at this point, wouldn't you?
I'd just be so excited. I mean, we moved out of London 15 years ago, and, I've never been so grateful as now. Because I actually left my nail marks in the M40 when we moved out here in 2005. I was really worried about leaving London. And I've done nothing but moan about being surrounded by fields for 15 years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was like that when I moved to.
Grateful I am.
I moved to Wiltshire. I couldn't stand the silence. I was walking around at night, going, "There's some madman's going to come and pickaxe me to death."
Yeah,
you know, because the country's
but
obviously
right now,
full
I'm
of
counting my blessings.
Full of maniacs. You
I
know.
Was stuck in London. I'd probably be, psychotic by now.
Yeah. Well, Kevin and I are psychotic, but not because we're stuck in London, but just for different reasons.
It's a full-time profession.
Yeah, exactly. So, Kevin, let's have your first one.
I'm going to go for the Europe editor of the lofty magazine The Economist,
yes.
Chris Lockwood, who tweeted this upon looking at a picture of Boris Johnson, a very sickly Boris Johnson. This is not someone who was at death's door a few days ago. Something incredibly fishy about this whole business. So what he's implying there is that the government and Boris cooked up his life or death struggle with coronavirus in order to get good publicity. You know, you scratch away the surface of some of these alleged educated impartial journalists and they're screaming lefties who can't stand the fact that a Tory government is in charge, that a Tory prime minister is in charge, and that Tory prime minister, Boris Johnson, is incredibly popular with the nation. And to tweet that a man who was at death's door, while waiting, by the way, for his partner to give birth to their baby, was faking his near-fatal illness is absolutely disgraceful. I don't like calling for people to be fired or sacked or anything like that, but I do think that Mr. Lockwood should consider his position.
I think you're absolutely right. I think we should rename him Chris Lockdown and just keep him out of...
I'm obviously in the music business, and so a lot of which you could loosely throw into, you know, the arts. So lots of people I know are very arty and very lefty. And on my husband's Facebook, because I don't do it on a personal level, some people we know and have always loved, they need a flipping tinfoil hat because they've been saying the same thing. He got well too fast. It was all a PR stunt. It was like I tweeted when he did the NHS clap on number 10's door, not death's door, that he doesn't look well.
He looked terrible, didn't
all.
He? He looked terrible. Yeah. Should point out that Lockwood, Mr. Lockwood, a day after his disgusting tweet, backed down. He said, "I have deleted a tweet that cast doubt on whether Boris Johnson has been seriously ill, as reported. I withdraw my comment and apologise for the offence it has caused." How do you translate that? Editor of The Economist. Hello, Chris. You better delete that tweet and you better apologise damn fast. Otherwise, I'm going to fire your ass. You know,
it's absolutely.
Quite clear.
It's not a proper apology, is it? He's not actually saying sorry at all. He's doing one of those things where you go, "Oh, I'm sorry, it upset you, but I'm not actually sorry at all that I said what I said because I still actually believe it."
Also, following on from that, if I may, Sheila Oakes, who's the mayor of Heena in Derbyshire.
Oh, her, yeah.
When somebody had put up a post saying a little prayer for Boris. She wrote, "Sorry, he completely deserves this. He's one of the worst PMs we've ever had." That is just disgusting.
It
Then there was the union chief the union chief who said that if Boris died, he'd throw a party.
Yes.
And then when he challenged about it, refused to back down, said, I stand by every word, and then his union suspended him, pending an investigation. What do you have to investigate?
Yeah, that's almost as good as the RSPCA taking 3 months to investigate Julian Morme killing a fox with a baseball bat, despite the fact that he'd rung them up to say, I've killed a fox with a baseball bat. You know, unbelievable what these people do. Now, my first nomination, I'm surprised they haven't made it in before this, actually, but they're the first time entry for the World Health Organization, who I have to say, considering that their name is the World Health Organization, are not really doing a very good job, because most of the world is sick and dying. And because of the fact that largely they did not take China seriously, they did not take the virus seriously. Now they've been criticised by the Australian government because they basically said that what they think can happen in China is the wet markets can reopen as long as they improve the hygiene. So Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison has said, look, not only is this the most ridiculous and irresponsible thing to say to China, but he says we in Australia, like every other country in the world, demand protection from this. You know, you cannot allow them to reopen. Worse than that, you're actually recommending that they reopen as long as they clean it up a bit. I mean, you know, Carol, it's absolutely unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, apart from obviously the worst thing to come out of this for all of us is COVID, and the damage to the world is almost indescribable. But, and I'm not a vegetarian, I eat meat, and I appreciate that different cultures eat different things, and we all sort of wrinkle our noses at you eat that. But you can see when something's in a disgusting state. You can hear when it's in agony.
Yeah.
If something's destined for the dinner table, it should be treated humanely and with respect and cleanliness for the animal's sake, let alone ours. So I can't understand the Chinese psyche at all. I don't know if it comes from the heavy communist doctrine that there's no kind of humanity, like everything's just collateral damage. It doesn't matter.
Mm.
Feelings don't matter. Pain doesn't matter. Hygiene doesn't matter. It's all very, very odd.
It is.
But yeah, the thing about the Chinese is that, first of all, the wet markets are worth 2 billion quid a year. It's a massive economic powerhouse in China.
Yeah.
That's why they don't want to close these markets down. And when they said we are now, in view of the coronavirus crisis, going to really crack down on these markets, we're basically going to close them down, except for medical reasons. Well, all the reasons people go and buy bats and God knows what are actually quasi-medical. They think, the lunatics, that these kind of strange animals, if you boil them up and you make soup, are remedies for ailments. They're not, of course, but that's what the Chinese believe. So it's a very lucrative industry, and that's why they won't close down the
And how are you going
markets.
To change your culture? You can't. It's ancient.
Exactly right. And
well,
the thing
is... Do you know what, Carol? I hate to contradict you, but it's not really ancient.
Oh.
The eating of all these strange animals came in under Chairman Mao when there was such a huge shortage of food that people turned to eating anything they could get their hands on, and then it became part of Chinese culture. So it's actually less than 100 years old, all this bat eating.
I thought you meant the medical side of it.
It's certainly ingrained now, and the Chinese have taken to it like ducks to water.
Mm. And what's interesting about the World Health Organization's attitude is that they're clearly sort of in the thrall of China. They're very reluctant to criticize them. They're very reluctant to order them to do anything at all. And apologists for China in this country as well, who say things like, oh, well, you know, they are changing. You know, they've now designated dogs as pets. And you go, what? Well, what were they designated as before? Food, apparently. You know.
And also, I can't believe I agreed with Donald Trump, who last week, I think, called out the WHO and said he was thinking of withdrawing funds because they were very focused on China, just took China's word for everything on face value, didn't do their research, like, you know, he felt they were part of some kind of cover-up. And I always get really worried when Donald Trump said something I agree with.
Yes, absolutely.
Wait, do we believe 5,700 deaths total from coronavirus in China? Do we believe that?
No.
No.
How could you? You absolutely
exactly.
could not. Carol, let's have your second nomination.
Okay, who shall I get? Who shall I save for last? Okay, my second one I'm going to go with. It's our second health minister blunder after the Scottish health minister.
Yeah, she actually won Plank of the Week last week.
Her home, yeah, her seaside home. So New Zealand's health minister has been demoted after he ignored traditional lockdown rules, and also, again, is, like the Scottish health minister, the face of the policy on the telly saying, stay home, save lives. So last week, Dr. David Clark, he was photographed going for a mountain bike ride, and he was 2 kilometres away from his home. So he apologised for the incident and said he showed poor judgment and didn't realise he'd gone that far. Blah, blah, blah. The next thing he spotted, he's driving his family 20 kilometres to their seaside home on the beach. And in New Zealand, politicians tend to have vans with their faces painted on the side, you know, vote for me and I'll set you free, all that sort of stuff. So he drove his family to their second home in a van with his face painted on it.
That's unbelievable.
That's just brilliant. It's so stupid. I think I sort of like it. So there you go. Dr. David Clark, New Zealand's second health minister.
Yes, London. I mean, it is extraordinary, Kevin, isn't it, that these health ministers seem to think that there's one rule for them and one rule for everybody else.
Well, I just think that all politicians in power who have been lecturing us about observing the lockdown, quite rightly, don't get me wrong, but they have to be very, very careful. And I know you were diffident about whether or not Robert Jenrick, the housing minister, was out of order for his visits to his parents, yeah, and nipping off to his second home. But it turned out that he said, oh, I had to deliver vital medical supplies to my parents. I thought, guy with 4 homes, loads of money, don't tell me that you're the only one can deliver medical supplies to your parents.
That.
Sure enough, someone cropped up who said, no, I've been taking around their medicine. So all I'm saying is, whatever we think about Jenrick, people like him have got to be ultra careful about the way they behave. It wasn't a good look what he was up to.
No, I have to say, I was encouraged to take the view that I took because the Daily Mail was making such a big thing of it. And I just wanted an excuse to tear the Daily Mail up on camera, actually. So,
And
it's hard for them too. You know, whatever your wealth and circumstances, if you're separated from your kids and your parents, that it's hard for everybody. But they have to set an example if they expect the rest of us to do the same.
Yeah, exactly right.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kevin, who's your second nominee?
Well, let's go for Paul Mason.
Yes.
Die-hard Jeremy Corbyn supporter and, of course, formerly the famously impartial reporter for the BBC's Newsnight.
Yeah.
He is now pretty much a full-time Labour activist. You've seen this story of the leak of the big report, the 860-page report into what went wrong at Labour HQ in terms of anti-Semitism, and they're investigating of it. That's the headline of the story, that 900 people from the Labour Party were investigated. Only 63 were expelled. Corbyn clearly stood by and didn't do very much. The Jewish community have said that Keir Starmer, the new leader, has done more in 4 days than Corbyn did during his entire tenure to help the Jewish community. But no, that's not the headline for Paul Mason. He, in a rambling 5-part tweet, he said that it was a national scandal that members of the Labour Party didn't like Jeremy Corbyn, conspired against him, and actually were responsible for the defeat in the 2017 election and indeed the last election. This is not true, Paul. The reason that Labour lost 2 elections, the last one, the worst defeat since 1935, is that Jeremy Corbyn was hopeless. He, at best, stood by and allowed anti-Semitism to fester. Some say he's an anti-Semite himself. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that's true. And the British people went to war against anti-Semitism, and we do not like it, and we will not vote for parties like that. And that's why they lost 2 elections, and that's why Corbyn has been consigned to the scrap heap of political history, where he will languish forever as a useless Labour Party leader who led them to disaster.
I found Corbyn's reign over the Labour Party so depressing. I'm not ideologically political at all. I've voted for every party, and sometimes I haven't voted at all. But I do come from a working class Liverpool background where Labour's like a religion. You know, my parents, it wouldn't have occurred to them to vote for anybody else. They would never question it. And today, my beautiful, beautiful 92-year-old Jewish aunt is being buried. She died the other day. And her husband, they live in a little council house in Liverpool, and they would have voted Labour all their life. And I just don't like to think that she ended her days wondering that the party she supported all her life had turned its back on her, you know?
But isn't it typical?
Absolutely. I mean, just these apologists, in, the Corbynite apologists, who will not, like a dog with a bone, will not give it up. They still say this man was fantastically popular. It's an aberration that he lost two elections. What's his name? Mason, our friend Mason, is calling for a public inquiry into interference in the Labour operation to try to win the election. Come on, you just lost, and you massively lost. You know, this is, and the way these some of these idiot Corbynistas say, oh, well, the thing is, you know, the manifesto, that ludicrous manifesto, free stuff for everyone, they said the thing is, it was very popular. Elements of it were very popular. Each element was extremely popular. But when you brought all those elements together, it wasn't popular.
Yes, that's bizarre, isn't it? It's absolutely ridiculous. And the thing about Corbyn, of course, is you're not right to say that he's not popular, because he is very popular. The trouble is he's just not very popular here. He's very popular in southern Lebanon. He's very popular in the Gaza Strip. And he's really popular in Venezuela as well. They love him there.
The Palestine, man, he's really up
They love
there,
him. They've got posters. You know, they've got posters of him on the wall alongside Yasser Arafat.
A Che Guevara hat, probably, yeah.
Exactly right. Now, my number three is a gentleman by the name of A.C. Grayling. Now, I had never heard of this guy until about last year, when the Brexit debate was kind of unfurling and losing the plot and everything else. But he's on the list again today because he keeps just making these relentlessly ridiculous connections to the European Union. And let me just tell you how he describes himself, because this is his website, OK? It says, Anthony Grayling, M.A., D.Phil, brackets, Oxon, F.R.S.L., F.R.S.A., is Master of the New College of the Humanities and a Supernumerary Fellow of St. Anne's College, Oxford. So it's not easy to get him in on a sort of a one-minute show that you're going to do and ask him for a quote. He's also written these incredibly sort of self-effacing books. The first one's called The Good Book. The next one is called Ideas That Matter. So, I mean, he's in no doubt about how brilliant he is. But he's also got at the top of his Twitter account, he's got, of course, the inevitable spider, you know, from the days of the proroguing of Parliament, right? He's got a fish, and he's got hashtag reform, hashtag rejoin. And his pinned tweet says, reform, rejoin, never give up fighting Brexit. And he made the ridiculous connection, as many of these sort of pro-European people did, Remainers at the time, when Boris Johnson came out of hospital. They made the point that, isn't it amazing that Boris Johnson was saved by a Portuguese nurse? He made no mention, of course, of the fact that the other nurse that Boris praised was from New Zealand. He just wanted to make the EU connection to say that, you know, well, of course, if it had been up to Boris, this guy wouldn't be living in this country anymore. He would have left because he's not welcome. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it, Carol?
I know. Well, they just leap on this, don't they, and make out that people aren't welcome. And I've always found this really, really difficult to discuss with anybody that I know, particularly in my music community, who, quite frankly, if they think that I didn't vote Remain, just think I'm Hitler.
Yeah.
It's been really hard to discuss these things and sort of raise the point that, no, we need to get the right people in doing the right thing. And I believe that there is, the NHS has, I can't even think of the word right now, where you can apply to still work, like a visa or something.
Yes.
They do want the right people in the right jobs, you know, and we are deeply grateful to anybody that works in the NHS, wherever they come from. I don't know why they try to interpret it any other way.
Look, I think that, Grayling, A.C. Grayling, is the quintessential, presumably reasonably intelligent, educated person who was turned utterly insane by the Brexit debate, whose passion for the EU is now unhealthy, unnatural, and frankly, weird.
Yes.
I mean, give it up, AC. We've left, and we're not going back. But he will campaign for the rest of his life. He got it all out of proportion. It's perfectly all right. I mean, I voted Remain. But once we had a referendum and the country decided that that's not what they wanted, I accepted it, and I hope the country will get on with enacting what the electorate had voted for.
Well, why does somebody like AC Grayling make of right now what's going on in the EU and all countries like Italy and Spain feeling very abandoned by France and Germany?
Carol,
I take no pleasure in this. I'm not going, see, look, told you we all needed to leave. I don't think that at all, you know, but surely they must be able to see the flaws in the EU now. I don't understand how they can't. They only see it as perfect. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because I think what's happened with the EU, that this coronavirus crisis will be very, very bad for the EU. What have we heard from the EU in this time of European crisis? Nothing. About one word about a month ago saying, oh, we might have a look at closing the borders all the way around the EU. Apart from that, nothing. And what do nation states belonging to the EU do in this time of trouble? They fold in on themselves and they look after themselves. So this federal idea that we're all part of a working together European Union is being exposed as nonsense.
Well, it really is.
It's not. It's an experiment. That's all it is.
Yeah, and also the point is every country in Europe in the 27 nations is going to be busted, financially broke, with no money whatsoever. So the idea that the EU is going to go to them and say, oh, do you mind giving us some money so we can keep living it up in Brussels and high on the hog in Strasbourg? And people are just going to go, no. And particularly since you didn't give us any help when we actually really needed it, you can get stuffed. And apparently there are people burning EU flags now in Italy because they're so fed up with it.
Well, lots of the mayors in this Italian towns took them down. And also I think it was whoever, is it President or Prime Minister of Hungary, I think it was. What they wanted was it a corona, equal corona distribution.
Yes.
So that everybody was funded the same way as opposed to, you've got more money than us. Mm. And he was saying, well, no, I think you should look at the budget of Spain or look at the economy of Spain, see if they can afford to look after themselves before you ask us for money.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So it's all very divisive and not as people think. That's what I've always thought.
Definite plankery for sure. Carol, your final nomination, please.
OK, well, bringing it up to some news of today, and I feel slightly guilty picking this guy because I've known him for years and have a very cordial relationship with him professionally. It's Eamon Holmes.
Well, yeah, because we all love Eamon Holmes, actually.
I just bought the tinfoil hat off Amazon. I'm having it sent straight to him because he was talking about the 5G radio signals and masts as, who knows, maybe they are transmitting the virus. He said, I have an inquiring mind. I'm not prepared to dismiss it just because it doesn't suit the narrative of mainstream media. I think everything should be looked into. And, of course, all scientists are saying, Eamon, please, somebody of your stature, can you not give this any credence on major television shows? So, for example, Dr. David Robert Grimes on his Twitter said 5G conspiracy theories are exhausting to debunk, but they're zombie myths and they can do serious harm. And people like Eamon Holmes endorse them on air. It's exhausting. Please, Eamon, if you want to utilise your inquiring mind, talk to some scientists. And I can't believe that Eamon has said that. Maybe he's been isolating or something. He's gone a bit nutty. We're all going a bit nutty.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, you know Eamon probably better than I do. And I really got to know him when he was working here at Talk Radio, and I found him to be an absolutely delightful guy.
Yeah.
And everybody does. But I think he does have this kind of slight, occasional tendency to just go off piste sometimes, you know. I wouldn't be. I mean, ITV are getting quite a lot of flack for it as well, saying that this is the second person on TV.
This is
the second person who said it. You know, they might need to be censured for it, or they really need to put out a statement of some kind. I mean, you know TV as well, Kevin, better than me. I mean, do you think that they'll say to Eamon, I'll tell you what, we better do a segment on this. We'll get a scientist in and you can sort it out that way.
Well, he's already issued an apology for it, and they may get someone in to re-emphasise that. I think what Eamon was getting at, and the reason he's a brilliant broadcaster and a great journalist, is, you know, he really is like the people that he broadcasts to. He's not on high preaching to them. He's part of them, and he's a normal bloke who understands what normal people are interested in. Now, the 5G mask thing, I think, was a palpable load of old rubbish, but a lot of people were interested in it, and I think Eamon thought it was worth talking about. In fairness to him, I think what he was trying to say is, I'm sick and tired of people saying, oh, apparently we don't have to wear face masks.
Yeah.
Oh, we do have to wear face masks. Oh, apparently tests won't be will cure all our problems. Oh, maybe they won't. Mm. In other words, it's this tirade of information we seem to get, only for it to be contradicted by the same experts not long later. So what I think he was trying to say was, you know, people are immediately saying this 5G mask stuff is rubbish. They've said that about a lot of other things, and then they've had to put it right. But I do think the 5G mask thing was a very poor example to use.
Yeah, I take your point, Kevin, on all the rest of it. And can I just say how much I miss Eamon as the anchor at Sky?
Oh, yeah.
Because the great thing about Eamon is he can do all these lightweight TV things. And I've met him when I was a young pop star, when he was on, you know, morning telly and stuff. But he's an amazing journalist.
Yeah.
He can interview and grill a prime minister like Andrew Marr can. You know, he's a very clever man. And I get what you're saying about, you know, I'm driving myself nuts looking at different experts, figures, reasonings, also do this, don't do this. And I'm thinking, what's the best thing to do? Who do I believe? What's really happening? But I think to include a tall metal pole in that is a bit...
Yeah, I mean, I think we could say, and when Eamon, yeah, when Eamon listens...
Love you, but you're not on my list.
Exactly. When Eamon listens to this, listen, that's just why it's called Plank of the Week. It's not nasty. We just picked him because he's done something very plankish this week. And it was all started, of course, by David Icke, you know, the most famous conspiracy theory producing former goalkeeper that I think I know. This is a guy who thinks that the Queen is actually a lizard,
and that
Prince Philip is also a lizard, and people take him seriously. And do you know, David Icke goes and does shows now around the world where he picks up, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of pounds from morons who pay 40 quid to sit there and listen to him talk for 3 hours. It's absolutely incredible.
Because it's alternative facts.
Yeah, it's not, well, as it, or lies, as I like to call it.
Well, I'm using the term loosely, obviously. That was it. Who was that? She was one of Trump's spin doctors, and she changed the world with that phase, because all of a sudden people went, yeah, alternative facts.
Yeah.
Can say what I like, so he absolutely can get paid a lot of money for his nonsense now, can't he?
And brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Kevin, your final nominee?
Well, I'm going to pick on the singer, Sam Smith.
Right.
But actually, he's just one of a number of celebrities with...
Did you just call him he?
They.
I continue to call him he in the hopes
I'm going
to
shame you on Twitter for that.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to call him he in the hopes that he sues me and I get even more famous and get even more listeners.
Well, I'm not going to use they, because that misunderstands the rule of plurality. So they is a plural, Sam, so I can't call you they.
So
I'm going to call you he. So let's see how
what about it?
Sue me. So sue me.
But sorry, we interrupted, Kev. Go pictured, on.
He has been pictured weeping at his £12 million home because he's so upset about having to self-isolate in these difficult times.
Yeah.
I mean, get over it, mate. 27 years old and you're crying because you're going to be locked up in your £12 million mansion.
No, well, I heard he'd just come off the phone from Meghan. She was so upset, so he got upset too.
But so the whole celebrity thing throughout this is really getting on my nerves. So apart from Sam, you've got Gordon Ramsay, who nipped down to his second home in Cornwall and can't believe that the locals hate him for doing that. And then you've got the Beckhams, who've managed. It's remarkable how many celebrities managed to get to their second home just before the lockdown came in, isn't it? What a coincidence.
Yeah.
Phew, thank God they got there. Anyway, the Beckhams are up in their Cotswolds bolt hole, taking copious pictures of themselves, you know, in their hot tub and their fantastic igloo out in the garden and God knows
that
what.
That is so indiscreet.
Just, like, leave us alone.
I think you have
leave
to be very careful.
We don't care.
Even if you live in a three-bedroom house with a basic garden, you've got to be very careful not to rub people's noses in all of that. If they're stuck in a flat with three kids in a and an old cat, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. But they can't help themselves. But it's actually setting out the wheat from the chaff here for me, because a lot of the celebrities who are doing the sort of Sam Smith routine and being absolutely and utterly selfish and ridiculous and narcissistic. There's also others who are doing some rather nice things. I mean, you'll know Toya Wilcox, I'm sure, Carol. But she
I know Toya very well.
She did a lovely little sort of ballroom dancing theme with Robert Fripp, who up until now I've always thought as the world's most grumpy man, you know. But here they were dancing in sort of full ball gown regalia. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, no, he's totally lovely, right. And Toya always, I can always make Robert laugh, so Toya likes having me on stage, because you get him out of himself, Carol.
Yeah,
there you go, that's my reason for living, is to make Robert Fripp laugh.
Yes, Kevin.
That's not my reason for living. Like, some celebrities have really stepped up to the plate. By the way, Ricky Gervais, who has been pretty vocal today, slamming these selfie-isolating celebrities, saying, just get off your high horse. We've got the NHS to worry, got people laying down their lives to treat people, and you're moaning because you're trapped in your £12 million house. He has been doing a nightly half-hour broadcast thing on Facebook and on YouTube, which it's just to entertain people, yeah, to chat to people.
And that's what they should do.
He stepped up to the plate. Some people, some celebrities, but you're right, Carol, have been brilliant. Others, less so. And can someone tell the Beckhams, you know, we're just not interested. If we had a crowdfunder, they love money, why don't we all collect some money together, give them 50 grand, and say, please, don't put any more pictures of yourself on Instagram.
Now, and also, I'll probably get flack for this, but with Instagram, I'm really sick of all these women putting pictures of themselves up with not very much clothing on, claiming to show us that they're working out and looking after their health and their fitness, when really it's just showing off your bod and taking an opportunity to show everybody you've got great boobs.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of them out there at the moment.
I'm
really
try that.
Irritating me.
Yeah, maybe I'll do one of those. Because you know,
you two might not be irritated by that.
No, I find Instagram.
If they're disingenuous. I was looking at someone the other day. I won't name names, but they're just going, oh, you know, I'm taking an opportunity with the lockdown. I'm getting on with my workout. I've done this. I've had my smoothie, and I just thought I'd show you in my skimpy underwear how that's working for me.
I know. No, I find Instagram to be completely and utterly not somewhere I go very often at all. You know, I tend to use Twitter. I tend to use Facebook, and I just don't really get Instagram. I just don't get it at all.
No, I just put up pictures of flowers.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, my final nomination is going to be one I think that could be the winner, but we'll see. But what I also do is I carry one over from last week, because I was struggling about what I was going to do about Kevin Maguire. It's Kevin Maguire, the associate editor of the Daily Mirror, which Kevin and I used to work at, has been a complete plank, really, for probably the last 2 years, I'd have to say. But this week he managed to insult not only the Prime Minister, but the Queen as well. She made that fantastic speech at the weekend, you know, and all he could come up with afterwards was, well, it'd be nice if you donate some money instead of just sitting there in your, you know, your highfalutin castle or something like that. And then he was another one who basically was very dismissive of Boris Johnson when he came sort of back to life and back from the dead, as it were. So he was number seven last week. So he's going to carry over because my real plank of the week this week is a Guardian journalist called Andy Sparrow. Now, this is a bloke who you might not have heard of before. I think he's a lobby journalist, works down in Westminster all the time. But he was attending the Easter Monday a press briefing, right, in lieu of whoever normally does it. And you know what these things have turned into now. It's just a load of, you know, of media people asking ridiculous questions to ministers who don't want to answer them. And it's become a ridiculous charade, in my view.
But journalism.
Well, it really is. But it's but it's a
hard. Why can't they make Laura Kunzberg go last instead of first?
Well, exactly right. And Robert Peston, every single, you know, everyone goes second. And his questions are getting so long that they're going to have to extend the briefing for about a week, I think. You know,
because there's an intermission in the middle of it.
Yeah, exactly right. technically now they seem to be failing. I mean, I put out a tweet on, I think it was Sunday. Well, it's a great new policy from the BBC. They've decided to mute their own journalists because this guy was asking a question. Nobody could hear it, you know, because none of them can work out. You know, they're busy asking the government why they weren't prepared to actually fight an unknown virus, but they can't actually prepare themselves to do a press conference by unmuting their own computers, you know. Anyway, so this bloke, what's his face, Andy Sparrow, comes up for his question, and he's similarly in some way handicapped, not able to do it. So as he's trying to fiddle about, they're saying, we can't hear you properly, Andy, maybe you could fix your microphone or something like that. He stands up behind his laptop in front of the webcam, and he's not wearing any trousers.
Did he have underpants?
Luckily, he did have underpants. I mean, it was a very quick sort of flash because immediately you could see panic in old Dominic Raab's eyes. And he said, right, let's quickly move to the next question. And they quickly got rid of this guy. And on the big screen, somebody else came up with another question. But it did go the rounds on social media as, you know, as Andy Sparrow loses his trousers. It was absolutely hilarious.
Well, my husband and I have been guessing, because now everybody seems to be on Skype. And have you noticed how big everybody's noses are as well on these home broadcast things? And we're guessing who hasn't got any pants on. We're going, yeah, he definitely hasn't got any pants on. And where's his left hand, by the way?
It really is. I mean, I bet you almost all of them are sitting there, because a lot of people, especially if you're in a hot apartment, because my apartment in London where I'm staying at the moment, when it was hot the other day, it gets quite warm. So yeah. You're generally speaking, you're not really wearing a lot of clothes. And if you suddenly have to go and do some kind of Skyping thing, you probably find yourself going, well, I better put a shirt on, I suppose. And then you don't bother with the trousers.
No, in fact, my husband did a Zoom conference call today in that he ironed his shirt, but he had his swimming trunks on.
I think that is Britain in a nutshell, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, well, that's when I was a TV critic. That's what I always used to say to them. They said, "What's the best part about your job?" I said, "Being able to do it in my underpants."
Absolutely right.
Sitting on the sofa, not wearing much, watching the telly, you know.
Brilliant, yeah.
I've been in greasy hair and a tracksuit a lot. I've been asked to participate in some lovely things, some NHS videos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Lady Dodd and Ricky Tomlinson got in touch with a load of Scousers, and we all had to sing along to Happiness by Ken Dodd.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
I wanted to sing more of my share of a penis, but they wouldn't let me, which I think is a funnier version. And they edited it all together, and it goes out, and it's a fundraiser and stuff like that. And I've been asked to do quite a few things like that, and having to go, oh my God, I need to do my hair and put some mascara on. It's like an enormous effort now, right, after 3 weeks of just flopping around in my PJs or a onesie, you know.
I mean, I must say, weekends now, because I don't come in at the weekend, and so I'm home alone in this flat in London. By the time you get to Sunday afternoon, you're kind of going, yeah, whatever, you know. Are you going to clean your teeth? Probably, you know.
We're going to turn into a nation of slobs in this lockdown.
Completely.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think those of us who have lived like that quite a lot anyway, I mean, I always say to people, you know, I spent hours and hours doorstepping people in cars all around the world for absolutely no reason, because they weren't even at the address that you were sitting outside. So, I you know, I don't really mind sort of spending hours and hours, you know, endlessly doing not very much at all.
Well, my world is kind of feast or famine. So I can either be on tour and never home, or I'm home all the time.
Yeah.
So part of it has been okay, but I have to say the first 2 weeks for me, I have, as you've often said, defiance syndrome.
Yes.
Like you have.
Yeah.
So we were in the pub when the lockdown announcement came.
Right.
And the bartender said, landlord's just called, Boris has put everything on lockdown. And I resented that, being
right.
told to go home.
I think we all did,
being told to stay at home.
Yeah.
I resent being told to do anything. I had to come to terms with it.
Right.
So the first 2 weeks, I literally was like a caged tiger, just pacing up and down the house. I wasn't getting anything. I wasn't using my time productively. I was really grumpy about it. But now I've reached acceptance,
yes.
I think. I'm better.
I think a lot of us have had that same journey, yeah. If you'll pardon me using such a woke word. But all right, here's what we do now, guys. We now have three nominations each, right? So what we need to do is reduce them down to one nomination each, okay? So what we do is you should pick, Carol, which one of Kevin's you want to put forward. And then he can pick yours.
That means I've got to remember everything he said.
Well, Kevin can tell you which his three are, or I can. It's up to
you.
Go
on, then. Remind me.
Kevin?
Yeah, I did the Europe editor of The Economist for doubting that Boris was really ill.
Chris Lockwood.
I did Sam Smith and celebrities moaning about being trapped in their million-pound mansions, and also Jeremy Corbyn's supporter mouthpiece, Paul Mason, for claiming that Corbynites were the reason, anti-Corbynites were the reason Labour lost the election.
So,
out of yours, although having a go at Sam Smith would be wonderful, I'm going to pick the health editor of the Economist.
Good choice.
No, it's a good choice. I agree.
Because I think that's appalling. Yeah, I know this is a light-hearted segment we're doing here, but that is absolutely outrageous, so I'm going to pick him.
Okay. So, Kevin, you should now pick mine. My three were, of course, A.C. Grayling, the man with no trousers, Andy Sparrow, and the World Health Organization.
I tell you, you know, I'm very tempted by A.C. Grayling and the World Health Organization, which has been an international disgrace throughout this crisis. But I'm afraid for two reasons, I'm going for Andy Sparrow. One, because it's very funny anyway, and two, because he works for The Guardian. So typical of The Guardian, is it? So Andy Sparrow and no pants.
Okay. So now I've got to pick yours, Carol. Do you remember what your three are, or do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, so I had the New Zealand health minister driving his family to the beach with his face painted on his van. Jamie Oliver cooking in what looks like an outside toilet so that he's empathising with how small everyone's kitchens are. And Eamon, giving a little credence to the fact that, who knows, the virus might come out of a 5G mast.
Yes. Well, because he's such a good friend of ours, Eamon, I'm not going to nominate him, because that means he'll still be in the top 10, but he won't be in the top 3.
Yeah.
And I think because the Health Minister of Scotland won it last week, I'm going to go for Jamie Oliver, because also he could be the chief sort of representative of the celebrity sort of idiots who are doing stupid things and annoying everybody. So we now have three finalists. We need to get them down to two. So we need to dismiss one of them. So we've now got Chris Lockwood, Jamie Oliver and Andrew Sparrow. So which one of those three is the weakest and it will come in as number three?
Depends what you... I might go the guy with his trousers.
Okay.
Missing is the weakest.
Okay. Previn, what do you reckon?
Right, for that reason then, Carol, I'm going for Jamie Oliver.
If you're gonna say. You like him and you've got all his books. I know.
So, in that case, I have the deciding vote. In that case, I'm going to say, let's take Jamie Oliver out there and make him number three.
Okay.
And that means the finalists are the Economist Chris Lockwood and The Guardian's Andy Sparrow. It's a journalist special.
Yay.
So it's great, great fun to have the top two planks of the week as journalists. What do you reckon, Carol?
Hey ho. I could have done about 10.
So tell us, who do you think should win?
In terms of just being utterly rude and horrible, I'd say Chris Lockwood.
Okay. Kevin?
Yeah, I'm really tempted to go for Andy Sparrow because it's so funny. But, you know, these are pretty serious times. And I think if someone is going to say that the Prime Minister of this country pretended he was ill for a bit of good publicity, then the Economist Europe editor, Chris Lockwood, deserves to be the plank of the week.
I think that's absolutely right. I cannot disagree. It's been tremendous, guys. Thank you so much for taking part. You've been epic. You were very good and you were very well behaved. And actually, we hardly talked over each other at all. So congratulations on very professional work.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys soon. Kevin, you'll be back on Saturday on Talk Radio, right?
I will, yes.
Excellent stuff. I should look forward to listening to that. Carol, I'm going to go home and listen to some of your music now, I think, after this. And,
in your underpants.
In my underpants, exactly right. As a tribute. As a tribute. And somebody said, whatever you do...
Great to talk to both of you and Kev. I hope I'll see you soon.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Carol.
Indeed. So there you have it. Plank of the week, Chris. There you have it. Plank of the week, Chris Lockwood. We'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.